It's time for the Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com.
This is Paul Daly, and I'm here with my wife, Caroline.
Hey, guys.
And today we're here to talk about the 7th episode of the 2nd season of USA's Colony. This one is called Free Radicals. I have no insight on the title.
Yeah, you do. Come on, Free Radicals.
I mean, I remember you telling me something you saw on Oprah about how these things are floating around in your body causing you trouble, and they're called Free Radicals.
Well, there you go. That's a mouthful. You just said things are floating all around causing trouble. Da-da-da-da. You can think of radicals as the people, the outliers, the people who have these extreme views, right? Doing extreme things. That's radical thinking.
We meet a couple of them right away. Frankie and the guy that I just think of as Kylo Ren's wimpier younger brother.
Nice.
This was very familiar on this show, a kind of sadly familiar.
Apparently everyone has sex the same way. Woman on top humping clothed is the way that people have sex on this show.
As we found out, wimpy Kylo Ren was medically infirmed.
Yeah, but Will wasn't, and Bram wasn't, and Will Nolan's not. All the other people we've seen have the exact same thing. I kind of wonder if like someone just gave them like one page out of the sex pamphlet and they're not even aware there's other ways to do this.
The Kama Sutra booklet.
Yeah, it's just one way. The woman gets on top and you sit there with your eyes wide open like, whoa. That's basically how it all goes down.
So by the end of this episode, given the way it begins and then another event that happens later, and then what we all already know about how Maddie is getting ahead in life, or when Katie distracts Will.
Same methods.
Made me wonder, are there any girls on the writing staff for Colony? I mean, I should know this being a podcaster, I suppose. I could look it up. I have a computer right in front of me. I know that Carlton Cuse and Ryan Condal are the biggest voices. I'm not calling them like misogynists or anything like that, but I am saying the girls are all painted with a similar brush here. They use sex to get ahead, and they're not really shown using other tools.
You know? Their brains?
Though, yeah, that's a tool, sure.
The other thing that bugs me is that sex is never for the enjoyment of the woman. Every single time, it's the same exact scenario where they're practically like making grocery lists while they're sitting on top of these men. And the men are all into it, but they're just like zoned out and they don't really care what's happening. And they all have this other motive that has nothing to do with like any type of in the moment kind of thinking. It is very one note. You had a theory about the sex and violence combination on this show.
Kind of got blown out on this episode. But the original theory we had discussed was the way this show seems to operate, and we don't know if it's the influence of the network or the writers, but there seemed to be either we're going to kill a lot of people this episode, or we're going to show some lascivious activities this episode, and didn't seem to co-mingle. This episode changed up my theory.
This time, though, it was they decided to pull like full throttle here, and all like at an intensity level that was very high. To that end, I felt like I kind of missed out on some of the storylines in a way that I would have been more invested in. Like, for instance, both Bram and Will have big storylines in this episode. But I can honestly tell you that I did not pay attention to the details of Bram's nearly as much, because Will's had all these continuous moments of like peril that he was going through, where Bram sort of has like one or two moments, but they get lost, and the subtlety of Bram's story really got lost for me in this episode. Did you feel that way?
On rewatch, and especially after our discussions, I felt like they could have taken a much more thriller-oriented approach to the way they edited and told Bram's part of the story, but instead it's just very straightforward and it's never really in doubt what's happening.
I do think that they take a suspenseful, but it's a muted suspense compared to Will's action movie. So like I'm saying, Will's is like this screaming in your face, shooting people to the back of the head kind of situations, where Bram's is so much more subtle, but it still has a lot of good beats to it. But unfortunately, it just gets lost. There was a really important scene with Bram that I did not give a second thought to, because the very next cut had Will's torture victim screaming her head off. So I lost his story completely wiped out of my brain. As soon as I heard the woman screaming, I forgot about Bram. So I never gave his story enough thoughtful moments. So one of the things that I would have rather them do is move Bram's story to either to last week or even to next week. Of course, I don't know what next week holds, but if they could have moved it even to last week and just let it build a little, perhaps the climax of his story doesn't happen until this week, but let his story build a little bit more. I think I would have been invested. I think I would have spent all last week trying to figure out Bram and Maya and what exactly was happening. And instead, I didn't even give him really a full second thought during this episode because I was really thinking about what Will's and Burke's situation was.
Then you wouldn't have the misleading foreshadowing of Frankie and wimpy Kylo Ren. Before they send him off to deliver their special package, they have a little toast that we see repeated later.
Yeah, I'm just saying that all could have happened last episode. You could have taken the cold open from last episode and put it to this episode. Mm-hmm. And you could have taken the one moment with Simon in the alley and put it in this episode. And that wouldn't have bothered this episode at all. Nothing good would have had to have changed, to be honest with you. So you would have put Frankie and Kylo at last episode's cold open. You see what I'm saying? If you swapped those. And then I really think that Bram's story would have been interesting. And then I think you would have set up Simon at the same time as Will and other people are all converging this episode into this questioning and this pushing for having to do more action. Simon would have happened at the same time. And what was odd is that Simon, he didn't follow up with the things that happened last episode at all.
That's true.
Which is kind of obnoxious and annoying to me because they set it up that he was like, oh, all of a sudden he was on like red alert. And this episode didn't even mention anything about his mom and everything that had happened in the last one. It feels uncomfortable to me in that it didn't need to happen that way.
Going back to the toast at Frankie's with the little cups with the kanji symbols on them reminded me of in Empire of the Sun when they're about to send out their kamikaze pilots. So I tried to look it up and see if there were any names or anything like that that I should be looking out for. And the toast prior to a kamikaze run doesn't have a name. If you know it, listener, please let me know because I would like to know. But that was part of the
main thing is ceremony. That they have a ritual. That's
it was
all.
Right. Even though it was done much less formally with Bram and Maya later, it was very interesting to know that they were connected that way.
The problem was that neither of us allowed those two scenes to connect and give us the proper amount of anxiety for Bram. Because in the cold open, it was the man standing in the line at the green zone who gets his backpack exploded by Frankie. So then you think, okay, the woman is going to explode the man. Okay, so now we have got that dynamic set up. So when they go through the same ritual with Maya and Bram, it was disappointing that they followed it so closely with the screen. Screaming. My anxiety level for Bram was nothing. I didn't even pay any attention to the fact, oh, wait a minute, does that mean Bram is going to be strapped with the bomb and Maya is going to detonate it? And that connection should have been made because I feel like they were clearly showing it very symmetrically.
Right.
You know, both couples had this really sad, pathetic sex scene. Bram the Minuteman is a hot mess. And then they both ask favors, basically, men. They both do the ritualistic drinking. Then have like this final outcome of this explosion. Again, like because of Will's story, as a viewer, I should have been incredibly anxious for Bram that he was going to take the role of the man getting blown up. And I never thought that for a moment that he was the one going to get blown up. So for me, that felt like a missed opportunity. They set it up, but they did not knock it down for me.
Mm-hmm. Maddie had two important things to do this week. One, she confirmed, even in the Hollywood interpretation of how computers are used, there is still some sense about the way things work. Theft off of Nolan's desktop did not go undetected. This was kind of satisfying because finally we were like,
how could it go unnoticed?
How could all these different little things go unnoticed? Yeah. Well, finally we got a little no, it didn't. And Nolan got in a fair amount of trouble about it.
I was actually surprised that, Nolan gave her some really cold stares, but I was actually kind of surprised that he didn't get even more pissed. I know that they were in the middle of a situation where they were about to film this infomercial for The Greatest Day and their religious building, I don't know what you call it.
Temple of some kind.
Like, yeah. I know they were getting ready for that, which I completely could not take Nolan seriously when he's trying to be very stern with her.
And with pancake makeup.
Well, and he has the napkin like tucked in his shirt for the makeup. And I get it. I understand this is all the process, but it's very hard to look at him and not be like, okay, pretty boy, quiet down. You know, you're getting your rouge all messed up by screaming, you know. So Maddie's body language was excellent. I mean, she was obviously like recoiled and trying to play it cool, but, you know, very obviously not.
Very interesting the position she was put in, because if you were arguing with someone who was responding like Maddie, you would detect something amiss. But the interesting thing is she's not lying, but she is covering. Or more like she won't admit to herself what she thinks she should probably know. She's not actually lying. She is covering. She has a good idea it's her sister, not going to give her up just like that.
Maddie is in such a precarious situation. Thought that she was handling the Katie showing up at the party well, you know, saying like, no, Bram is in this labor camp. That is the situation. And I don't think she thought it through at all about showing her the computer. I think she was in a spot where she felt like she needed to give evidence that she was being truthful with Katie. And so she showed her the computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think she,
yeah.
I think it was just one of those things where you just are like, no, I'm right. Look, here's the diary passage. And you like forget that you just showed the diary,
right?
You know, or left the diary.
I remember there was a fair amount of Twitter chatter with people thinking that Maddie left the screen up for her. No. By this reaction,
and
no way.
People had a lot of other sort of, I think, kind of misguided comments about, yeah, that she had these other motives. And I honestly believe 100% that Maddie is brainwashed and is very much in that evening focused on Nolan and the speech he's given. And when that service person comes in and says, Nolan's about to give the speech, Mr. Burgess was like you to be in there. I think her brain was like just swirling. I don't think she was thinking anything about Katie trying to deal anything with Bram. I think she legitimately wanted Katie to skedaddle. She wanted to answer Katie's question quickly. When Katie didn't believe her, she just wanted to quickly show her the true evidence and be like, all right, see, look, I'm being truthful. Just like sisters would do. And then she just got swept back up into the Nolan greatest day moment, which is kind of the entire moment that Maddie's having, getting swept up right now.
She hasn't even mentioned Hudson this whole season.
No.
And that's really why she tried to get in with Nolan in the first place.
Right, to protect him and make sure that he gets his meds and everything. So Maddie coming to talk to Katie had to happen. And I do understand there was a lot of people who were kind of barking about how Katie played this. And I'm kind of all over the place. Katie obviously could not admit to it because she knows that they have cameras in the house. So she couldn't say, I'm sorry, I did download it or whatever. Even if she thought sister to sister, she could admit
that.
And
they edited in that little blip just so that you, the viewer, forgot about it, now you should remember.
Right. They showed like the camera view black and white. So to remind us all that they're being watched. So Katie obviously had to say she didn't do anything. And Maddie's looking at her. And in that moment, I guess what we have to think is that Maddie, I assume, maybe doesn't know that the Bowman's house is under surveillance like that. Maddie's face is kind of confused, hurt, everything, because I think she knows very well that Katie's completely lying.
She's got to. Unless she's just the least intuitive person on the universe.
I don't think it's that. I think that you're dealing with sort of almost like a drug addict or something. And so all she's thinking about is that box and all these work, this important work she's doing with Nolan. So I don't think it's about not tuning into what's happening so much as it's just she is completely and totally swept up with being the first lady of the greatest day. I think her brain is like doing the Homer meow, 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 meow. In her brain, I don't think she's thinking the same way that she would have before.
Fair enough. She had another message. And this was kind of interesting because last week, Katie had told Will something along the lines of, I fired Lindsay. I'll call Maddie and deal with it. And here's Maddie to say, hey, you need to fix this thing with Lindsay.
Funny, like, chain of command kind of thing, because there's nothing about Maddie and Nolan that seem like they have anything to do with who the tutors are and all that kind of stuff. They're not, like, the director of the tutors.
In movies, anyway, the way that they would always represent things like the Russian government or the Nazi government or something like that, where it didn't really matter where you were in the government. Just as long as you were there, you could influence someone else in the government. And I wonder if, like, if you were in, say, the energy department of the United States, States. Could you call that person and have them lean on someone in the education department? I kind of doubt it, you know?
I know it's natural to say, well, I'm going to go to my sister, who is like the one person in the government. I get it. Again, it's just feeling like kind of one note. Oh, you know, something's going on with Charlie. I know. I'm going to call Maddie and Nolan over there. Oh, something's going on with Bram. I know. Let's call Maddie and get her to fix. Oh, something's
right,
going on.
Right, because he just is it's in just, the government.
But it's just, it's do something else. Have another idea. We're having the same conversation over and over, whether it be, oh, it's a drone again. Oh, it's the same woman on top sex scene. Oh, we have a problem. Let's run to Maddie. Oh, wait, didn't we just have that same situation where Maddie said, quit bothering me? And then Katie said, I'm not going to bother you anymore because you have a good situation up here and I'm going to not wreck it for you. Like, haven't we had this moment?
Yeah, Katie's full of lies.
I like that they had those moments where they like brought in Devin so that we like had like a different source of information.
And she didn't even have sex.
Do something else.
All right. So Katie eats shit all the way over to the...
I think it's eat crow, not eats shit.
Well, eats she might shit. She might disagree after having to talk to Lindsay like that. We enjoy tweeting with Erin Way. She's a very active tweeter. She'll answer you back. It's very cool that she does that. But Lindsay, her character, is the most smug little human. I mean, could you imagine having to apologize to her and say, please take us back?
Oh, it's awkward as hell. And the both of them with their frozen smiles of like acting like nothing happened. Really, honestly, the last time you saw your boss, they were like, get the hell out of here. And then you come over and you're like, Mrs. Bowman. Like, it's just, it's all very,
right.
Very
I'm
icy.
Doing tours at the temple now that I don't have any tutoring jobs.
Dude, way spookier than that. She was telling those children, if you listen carefully,
turn in people,
which is exactly what we had mentioned in early episodes. Definitely Gracie was going to end up being in the position of being a turncoat in a major way. Whatever her parents are doing, she's going to stumble onto something about it, and she's going to be the leak, man.
And that should also remind you of that, again, Russian and Nazi government stuff where it's like, turn in the name to the secret police and then they're gone the next night. You know, mm-hmm. Or 1984 is another good example of turning in a name and then they're gone the next day.
With the children, that was something that was extra spooky about this whole premise, was turning in your own parents.
But believable given those references.
Every single person is incentivized to tell everybody, including the children, on your own parents. It's just scary.
The word subversive came up a lot this episode from Burke. I think that was part of what Lindsay was telling the kids or something. If you spot somebody being subversive, don't quote me on that. I might be totally wrong. But that word came up several times in this
episode.
Lindsay
said it again when she was talking about Charlie. She said that Charlie was throwing the ball against the wall and it was bugging
right,
them. And
that's
she said,
it.
I would hate to have to report these subversive acts.
Right.
So yeah, she definitely uses it. I guess Lindsay's going to be back in action with the Bowman crew, although I have no idea how the Bowmans are going to be able to do everything they're doing with Lindsay right there. This is going to
Yeah, by the end of the episode, weird. they've adopted a couple extra projects that,
yeah.
that are going to be tough to do without a home base.
I don't quite know what's going to happen, but Katie did follow through exactly how I thought she would with Broussard, and that their connection would definitely be her bringing the thumb drive to him. Broussard was able to take action on all of it.
He knew a guy who knew a guy. The man knew his stuff, and he was able to figure out that there was a countdown happening with the first recording from a couple episodes ago in the cold open. He believes that the recording he got off the thumb drive is a countdown again. So the big question mark is counting down to what? I put forth the theory last week that maybe they're moving us. Another version of that theory is they are cleaning the the planet off and they are using us to help do it until it just sort of gets down to zero people. Sort of like when companies are laying people off. And then at the end of the layoffs, they tell the people that were doing the layoffs, oh, by the way, you're all laid off too. Decreases like that, you know, until there's none.
I liked that they gave us definitive timelines.
That was good.
They had figured out it's 2 years, 3 months, and 9 days, which we did a little bit of math. I know that they're not in the same time frame as we are right now, but I just did like quick math from like the night that aired. That would get us to June 1st, 2019. if you were going from the February 23rd, 2017. Zero day was March 10th, 2016. So that would have been the 1 year, but I don't know what the time, if anybody has the timeline like very clear in their brain and has a good idea of exactly what date it's supposed to be, I'm going to try to use some eagle eyes on some episodes coming up to try to see if a date is exposed like on a calendar or something in the house or is something at the work or something. But at this point, we don't really know where they are.
No. So, because 2 years does not equate to 2 seasons, because there's no way that what we've seen in the 2 seasons we've seen so far, that does not equal 2 years. That, to my mind, equals the span of a couple of months.
If anybody has a good timeline, please tell us. I'm like the worst at math, and like the idea of sitting here and trying to pound that out is like bleh, so not interested. But would love, love, love to hear some feedback from you guys. So Broussard does a great job, gets this countdown info, totally finds it. I thought it was interesting that I thought the key on that thumb drive was going to be about manipulating the lists that were there, Bram's information, all that kind of stuff. And it turned out that at least at this point, that file wasn't even anything. I mean, that Elliot told them that he was up for rehabilitation and that they would
send him home in 6 months.
But 6 months is like kind of laughable because of this countdown and the way that the people are being exterminated. Like that part all kind of doesn't matter. But the fact that the whole focus was really on that they had downloaded these other things, I didn't see that coming at all, that she had downloaded all these other files or whatever was
right
on that
thumb drive. Why would that be on Nolan's desktop also?
I don't know how computers work well enough, but if the file is up on your computer that is supposed to be this one thing and she only like clicked like one time or whatever, I don't really get why the thumb drive would have just been full with all the information from the server, or at least a good chunk of what the thumb drive could hold.
Did she come with a thumb drive or did she steal
it
out of the desk?
No, she stole it out of the desk. So do you think it was already on the thumb drive?
Well, that's a dumb possibility, but yeah.
But does that make sense though? Because
no, but
it's a dynamic.
But thumb drives have extra crap on them until, you know.
True. Well, but okay, let's think that through then. That mean that the 2 years, 3 months, 9 days thing is even accurate? What if that's old information?
We're just assuming that we're still using like Windows or something like that. The file would have had a date calculated from that date and then compensate for what date it is now. Like with the list.
I mean, changes could have been made to that.
That is the sort of thing that would be data dynamically given to you from a central server. So the idea that you could take it means that you would have just a static representation of it. So you can't change it. It's like getting a PDF or something like that.
Right.
You
that
know?
Makes sense.
If computers still work the same.
If any computer guys or girls have any big ideas about how this server computer information is all working and whether they could be manipulating any of the files or whether it's totally, like we said, a snapshot on the thumb drive, give us some feedback. Tell us, what do you think?
Was your jaw just on the floor when Broussard asked Katie back?
I wasn't surprised that he asked her back. I
Me neither.
I have to say the wording he used was like a slap in the face to a viewer because what he...
It was intimately worded, I need you back.
That's not it. It's that he said, I need a partner to help me think things through. Really? Like she has a sash that says, like, Miss Thinks Things Through 2016. Like, no. He should have said, I need a partner for knee-jerk reactions and, like, short-sighted planning. And I know you're the queen.
Right.
So come do that with me. It was too gaggy because they didn't need to say that. If he just said, we need more manpower. You have good access to more information. You're getting information in a way that with Maddie and with Will, that you're kind of like bringing in information that we can put all together down here with all of our information that you don't have access to. We are an asset to you if you're trying to figure it out and you have information that's an asset to us. But to actually put it that pinpoint of like, I need someone to help me think through a plan. It just, I mean...
And did I mention that the...
It's like if he said, I need someone with a really strong marriage who is always home with their children and who never walks their dog or whatever. You're like, but she's all the opposite things.
And
like,
is a master of disguise.
Weird and awkward. I 100% know Katie's going back, obviously. And it turns out after Will's terrible, no good, very bad day, he is probably also going to join the ranks of Broussard Bunch.
He is
going
to need some way to extricate himself from his current situation. And if he doesn't do it the right way, he's going to have Burke chasing him at his heels.
Dude, there's no way to extricate yourself in the right way. What's the right way to leave the Global Authority? In a body bag is the answer, Paul. In the factory. This is going to be a hot mess scene no matter what he does. It will be interesting to see how he does it. I really thought it was funny how the dynamic had switched where Burke and Bennett seem to have been like coming in together as like teammates. All of a sudden, Bennett was willing to give Will like a lot more credit in that like suddenly they were like the same. So like when Will complains about Burke, he doesn't say anything like, how dare you? Burke is your superior or something like that. He doesn't say anything like that. He's like, you know, when he complains about being on a short leash and gives Burke the side eye, Bennett's like, Bob, what have I told you? Give them more leash. You can't be such a dick partner.
And later he's like, results or you're both fired.
Suddenly they are the same. The way that they bickered in this one was like all of a sudden their footing became so different. I mean, I thought it was funny. It was actually funny the way that they would respond back and forth to each other. First outing that they have to go do together now after this Felix and Oscar type reestablishment of their I just don't agree with your methods type of behavior is that they're going to go and try to find Frankie's family and
shake them down.
Lean on them, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think about this method of Will's just going to, you know, size him up and Burke's just going to go ahead and call their grandkids?
He's going to call the grandkids by calling Red Hat HQ where they have the grandkids. That was highly motivating for those two people. From a results standpoint, Burke's method worked. Will was going to give up.
Who do you think gave him the information?
Those two. I mean, that's all we saw.
Okay. So then given that, then Will was not doing a good job, you know, because they did know the information. And Will straight said, they're scared as cats, but they don't know anything. And when Burke pushed on them, we don't have any other information. Then suddenly they're at the house where Frankie and everybody is. Uh-oh. Do you think he legitimately thought those people knew nothing? Was he just trying to be Bo-ish about it and just try to move them along and try to hinder the investigation and not get Frankie? Or do you think he legitimately thought these people don't know anything?
That's what I think.
Okay, then that's bad investigating because then Bob brings in the grandkids and suddenly they know exactly what hell she's at. So then that would make Will the bad investigator in that situation. He didn't get the information out of the suspects.
He did not get the results, no.
My question mark is, did something get edited out? Or are we being led to believe that those people did have information and he had come to the conclusion that they didn't? Are they trying to show us that Will is starting to get not good instincts? Maybe because people are starting to change. Maybe because the people who like these old grandparents who you would have thought, no, they would tell me, blah, blah, blah. Life is different now. The world is a different place. And Will's investigating skills and his gut intuition is no longer valid.
I'd buy that the world is changing because he used the same approach with Frankie in the interrogation room and with Frankie's aunt and uncle, which was
they both bit him in the ass.
He tried to be not even good cop. He was trying to be like, these people I work for, they will keep pushing unless you give me something now. He tried that kind of same approach with both of them, trying to distance himself to be like, I'm maybe wearing the suit, but I just work for these people. And in both cases, it severely didn't work out.
I think that it's that the world has changed and that his methods and the assumptions that he makes about people are no longer valid. And I'll tell you a situation that I think is going to blow up in his face. When we were at the house that they came to take down Frankie and friends, he lets a guy go. Now, I know he lets him go because he was
his Burke was out there killing everybody.
He was absolutely at his max for watching these kids get shot. I'm not saying that this was a bad choice. I understand his choice 100%, just as a feeling person. I 100% get it. My problem is that I think he is underestimating how far other people will go. And the Frankie torture scene proved that. He thought if he untied her, she would trust him and all this. And then no, she was just doing that in order to be able to commit suicide and get out of this. If I was writing the story, that guy that he let go is absolutely going to be on the other end of the scenario. And he's going to have to show some mercy to someone else that would benefit Will. And the man is not going to show the same mercy. And it's a wake-up call that, like, I know you think you're showing mercy because that's the world we live in, but they don't live in that world anymore. And unfortunately, it's becoming like a fish out of water. Like the idea of being a just, fair person, it doesn't work anymore. And it stinks.
But he's got it in him, though. I mean, he took down Solomon's whole operation.
Oh, no, but that was fair and right. Those people were hurting children.
Yeah, but
those
he had to get there. He had to see his son scarred up because of this guy.
Right now in our world, if you saw a child with scars on them, and you saw the person who was doing it, you would absolutely try to stop it for the child, to save the child, especially your own child.
Sure.
So that's still the world we live in. This scenario of like thinking like, well, maybe I can let this guy go. Maybe I can let these grandparents go. Maybe I can help Frankie and untie her. I know it is going to be positive. It happened with Frankie. We watched it happen. I think it's going to turn around and be like, we don't live in that world anymore. What did they say? You either adapt or else you're out of here. Well, who would want to adapt to this way of thinking? I completely agree. But if they don't start adapting to it, they won't be able to effectively fight against it. He is not realizing that those people are enemies in their own way, because they will kill you too. So it's very every man for himself, even when you're kind of fighting on the same side. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is terrible. It's terrible. But it is where they've gotten to.
Yeah.
I mean, so for instance, I'll give you a different example. When Frankie's Kylo Ren dude was in the line at the green zone, and he saw the kid in the line and sort of had second thoughts and thought, no, I shouldn't do this. I should just take off. The problem was the people who were probably heading into the green zone there, those were the same people who would have turned the gun on him.
Sure.
So he was worried about saving that kid's life. That kid probably would have shot him in the face. What do you do? How are you ever able to be a good person, if you will?
I think I see what you're getting at, because this season has done a lot to demonstrate that while Will was gone, everything pretty much changed. The kinds of people that he was able to kind of have an understanding with at Homeland, where he worked, none of them exist there anymore. And they're all just faceless suits that are cold and will turn him in at the drop of a hat for just taking too many breaks or something.
Well, and you're taking it that way, but I'm saying that they have their own reasons. Like Bennett and Burke will be killed. I mean, we just saw it. I thought Burke was on the inside. I thought Burke was one of the machines. But then we heard Bennett say, if you don't do it, then you're fired too. So, I mean, everybody will turn on everybody is sort of the main point. Burke was no safer than Will. Bennett's no safer than Will. Everybody can be turned in on a dime. That's when it gets dicey, because now, you know, do your job, quote unquote, well, and you're killing one person. Do your job poorly and you're killing another person. But at the end of the day, you're still killing someone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard, because like we're sort of rooting like, oh, it's okay if he went and killed Burke, but then, you know, it's not okay if Frankie dies. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, like a human still died.
Before we get off of Will, let's look at that Charlie scene in the backyard with his beating stick.
What do you think about all of that?
Little review. He encourages Charlie to hit this stick. Charlie hits the stick. And he says, no, you need to hit it like this. And Charlie gives him this look, then leaves the backyard. And Will doesn't know what to make of that. I didn't know what to make of that either. But the most satisfying theory I came up with for my own self was Charlie had been through the Santa Monica experience for the last year. He has a certain amount of, I know the way things work about him. Getting punching lessons from Dad, part of it was hitting this makes you tougher, was the message. And to me, I was getting a little bit like, Dad, do you remember where we just were? What I was just doing? I think I've learned a few things since we've had, you know, driveway time with my ball and glove, you know?
To that point, in fact, they had been trying to hope that Charlie would actually soften back up. So they had actually been encouraging him to, you know, it's okay, you don't need to hoard the food, and it's okay, you're safe here, and giving him all these messages. And so then to turn and say, oh no, let's callus up those knuckles and let's work on, you know, getting a really good punch is sort of like, I think, a mixed message, and I think a scary message for him. I wrote down all these maybes, and I put, you know, maybe Charlie was flashing back to when some other man taught him how to fight. Or maybe Will was never the kind of dad that condoned violence. So now when he is, he's kind of realizing like, oh crap, this situation is way worse. Maybe it is simply the mixed message of, you know, last week you're telling me I'm totally safe. This week you're trying to help me punch better. What in the world is that? And maybe it is just like the being offended that like, Dad, I'm tougher than you, dude. Like, I'm the one right. That told you about the coyotes. I'm the one that told you how to survive over here. I'm kind of just offended by that. Those are just some of the things that we came up with. You know, what do you guys think? Why do you think Charlie made that look? Why do you think he was so...
So by the end of this shit-tastic day, Katie and Will, the short version of their conversation is, are you ready to start talking to my resistance friends? Will's answer essentially is, yes, I am ready.
He just can't continue to do this stuff anymore, which is, again, completely understandable. The trouble is that he is, if the idea is I can't sit through torture and I can't sit through shooting people anymore, my bummer frown for him is like, Bubba, you're just going to be torturing and shooting someone else. It's not, there is no, like, I don't want to be a part of this gross, horrible situation anymore. Broussard's group is doing horrible things, blowing people up, waiting in line at work is just as disgusting.
I mean, he said that he would join the resistance before he heard the part about the countdown outcome, right? I think in the other order, if he would have found out about that first and then agreed, I don't know, that seems like that would make a little more sense, because up until now, I'd had this opinion that collaborating would be a way to keep your family safest, right? Because this transitional government or whatever was affording its closest adherents the highest standard of living, you know, and that's kind of what you want for your family. But I think in doing so, you wouldn't possibly be going into that thinking, well, and the transitional government is moving us to a place of complete racial genocide. Or, you know, if you knew that, then you might be like, no, actually collaborating is a totally bad idea. I don't think I can help the people that are actually going to wipe us all out, including themselves. Mm-hmm. Interesting that he agrees ahead of learning that.
I do. He, again, still just doesn't have the full scope. Nobody does. None of them really realize, you know, they're still only thinking about this in terms of their block. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look, this is when the block is empty. They're still not even pulling the camera back and saying, ha-ha. Does that mean the whole world's empty at that point? Does that mean, you know, where are we at in this whole scenario? Because I do think that the next plan will be, then we got to get out of the block, right? I don't think he's going to be able to leave the authority without leaving the block. And so in doing that, I think what they're going to have to start realizing is like, uh-oh.
Right.
It's just as bad elsewhere, if not worse.
LA's highly organized compared to other places.
So far as we've seen, that's the scenario.
All right. So we've touched on Bram just a little bit. Bram had a pretty good adventure this episode.
There were some interesting steps and missteps that happened in this part that were a little confusing. I know people on Twitter were real pissy about some of the parts, like, you know, the fact that they would go through a locked gate and not turn around and close it. They would leave it open behind them. That was like infuriating to most people, which I completely agree with. I hate those types of small moments. Was surprised about like Jenkins like popping up on them the way he did.
Right.
But then it was equally weird that a third guy popped up. The guy who actually did kill Jenkins was also just suddenly
there. Well, I think he was scheduled to show up. Jenkins, though, ostensibly we think that he might be in charge of the guards. And if there was this diversionary escape attempt, shouldn't he be over there?
I don't know. I'm still not sure. I mean, I don't feel like we're going to get more about Jenkins' story. I don't. I think he's dead and I think it's over. So, right. But at the same time, it's hard for me to know if, I don't know, like maybe he thought he was supposed to meet Maya. Maybe he was supposed to be behind that crate with her instead of Bram. I don't know. Like maybe it was more, you get what I'm saying? Like maybe he did play a role and because he was more pissed that Bram was there.
Who, Jenkins?
Yeah.
No, Jenkins was not in on anything. He was there as a prison guard.
Okay, so you don't think he had anything to do with anything the whole time?
No. No. When they said we had a red hat, he was a guy with the mask on. They didn't mean Jenkins.
I didn't mean it was Jenkins.
Anybody who believes after Jenkins got the hammer to the back of the head treatment that he was in league with the prison revolt is crazy.
See, but you're funny because like my point is that people are going to die along the way and Maya and company were fine with that. So Jenkins could have been 100% with them the whole way and they still killed him.
Yeah. Okay, but why would he try to kill Bram?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to think it through. Like, was Bram not supposed to be there?
I think it is what it is in that
scene. Then how do you explain all the other times? Like, why did he shoot the two people instead of interrogating?
Because he's a dick.
I don't know.
People are going to die along the way and people are going to be dicks. Those two things don't disagree.
It's so simple because every single one of his actions led to them not being able to move forward on the case. of what was happening at the labor camp. That just feels like, So we did have that scene with Bram and Maya sharing that ritualistic drink. And again, we both said like, okay, obviously looking back and watching it again and just focusing on his character, we definitely were supposed to be nervous for Bram.
It's not a coincidence that these two girls follow the same ritual. That means that somewhere they are getting back to the same leader, the same hierarchy that's telling them how to operate.
Yeah, because when they did have the Will moment with Frankie where he said, how do you recruit them? And she said, I find young boys at the end of their rope and I take them to bed. I mean, that's exactly what Maya did. Then in that case, yeah, for sure, somebody is giving them this game plan.
All right, so we have a couple pieces of information there, you know, or at least leads. I felt like this could have been edited, crafted, whatevered in a way that would have created more suspense as to whether or not Bram was going to be a suicide bomber or not. But instead, they plowed ahead in a pretty by-the-numbers kind of way that kept the camera firmly on Bram and let us know that he was in line with other prisoners and all this other stuff. So it was like,
would have been more suspenseful to just have Proxy come out, not show Bram at all, show the
explosion.
The explosion, and then it just be like, oh crap, who was involved with that? Was it Bram? Was it Maya? Who's there?
That would have been
way more suspenseful.
Like kind of upper level, you know, move there. This was more like kind of standard TV. I was kind of hoping for a little better than just, let's just keep the eye on the star here and see what happens.
I think we were supposed to be anxious, though, from the time we saw them drink the toast all the way until we actually saw him at the bus. I think we were supposed to be invested and worried and thinking he's going to die. So when we saw him, it was a relief
that
it
wasn't him,
because we didn't invest at the toast. And that's the part where I kept saying, like, I don't get why. Looking back, why didn't we get invested at that point? How come it didn't work for us as viewers? What kept us from getting locked into that story? And it was Will's story. It was because literally one cut later, Frankie is screaming her head off and we forgot about Bram. We forgot to be worried about him. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's where that story could have been very anxiety inducing, very concerning. And so when we saw him at the bus, we would have been like, ooh, okay, you know, maybe he's going to blow up the bus. Maybe that's what they're going to do. Maybe that's what ultimately happened here. I don't know. Then to actually see the ship explode, that was pretty exciting. I felt like, yay, for like some movement. I like that there was a new type of ship. How I was talking about, I want to see new host.
Yeah, we haven't seen that tech, at least not full frame. You know,
and I thought it was cool, and it made like a really horrible sound, obviously. I liked how Snyder had his handy dandy earplugs. Now, there was a red hat that was over the shoulder of Snyder that I am highly suspicious of. And as much as...
This is a very great theory, everyone. Listen closely.
Oh, I appreciate that. I tend to pay attention to people's faces a lot. And so when the red hat behind Snyder's eyes, eyebrows, and sort of facial features, to me, it was just a strip that was exposed, really reminded me of Maya's. Also, her body was extremely petite. And they went through the trouble of showing a full body shot of her. She like turns to the side and she is tiny.
She's not really any taller than Snyder.
She's way more slight because she's wearing the entire uniform with like all kinds of weaponry and stuff. And she's like thinner than him, even with all of that on her.
They've made it a point to show that red hats are sort of like Marines. You know, they're of a type. You know?
They bothered to say, remember when we had the guy lined up, the fat pudgy guy, like, oh, do you have like all this like fitness training? He's like, well, I've done cardio kickboxing. You know, like they bothered to say that like that was something. So to have this really, really, really tiny person just seemed really off from the really big prison guard red hats that you'd think would be in there.
Right.
She'd be someone that would be easily overwhelmed by the population. I was suspicious of that. Then I also thought, okay, they would have had to get rid of Jenkins' body. Is it possible? I know we thought maybe Maya had to go into the pod with the bomb in order to detonate it, but they showed the other bomb was detonated by remote. So could it have been possibly true that she actually put Jenkins' body inside the pod, which is why I'm arguing that killing him was always part of the plan. They put his body into the pod, put the bomb in there with him, strapped his face on so that he looked like everybody else's, you know, strapped the mask on. Yeah. Then Maya put on either his gear or perhaps even switched out with the one red hat that they did have a relationship with so that there could be an outfit that fit more. And then she basically just got right in the ranks and she had the detonator. She sat there and watched when it was go time. She was right out there. She pushed the button, however she detonated it, and there it blew. So now at the end of the shift, she's just going to walk out with all the other red hats, like job well done that day. And now she's not only blew up the ship, gotten rid of Jenkins' body so that there's no, it's just like Jenkins just went missing somehow. And now she is walking free.
With Jenkins missing, you have a suspect.
Yeah, you can think that it was him all along.
Interesting. Very good. Very well thought out.
Well, because Jenkins was a problem the whole time for Snyder. So wouldn't it just make sense that it would have been him? That would have been the one that was doing the subversive acts? Wouldn't it make sense? Because Snyder was like, what's up with you? Why would you shoot those guys? Why wouldn't you let me interrogate? It would make perfect sense that it would land on Jenkins' shoulders.
So as triumphant as the explosion would be to those that planned it, whomever they were, I think by showing all of our other little groupings see the explosion at the same time, I think the rest of them were thinking, oh shit, whatever's going to happen next is probably going to happen fast. It's not going to be like, we need to sort this out, people. I think it's going to be Retribution City from the get-go.
Well, and especially like from Will's point of view, maybe Katie, I don't know how much she absorbed the fact when they just took Hyperion and they had him and they took the artifact, how much retribution was thrown at the LA block. I mean, now how are they not going for total rendition? Like right. Now they've exploded ship.
It would be interesting to see if Helena is in next week's episode.
And I gotta think she's gotta be, right? Now she's gotta answer to this.
Right. Right.
Oh, Helena, right. We feel bad for you.
When last we heard from you, Helena, you were saying something about having a sterner hand with your block.
I think they're definitely going total rendition. But then that also forces the Bowmans
to get out.
To get out, which means that no matter what decision Will made, they would be getting out. Even if he had said, no, I'm sticking with the authority, blah, 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 they would still be on the run. Things would be changing, you know?
Which puts them in needing to not get arrested. They need to get Bram. They need to find a way out. And they need to do it in 3 episodes.
Bram and Proxy are going to still be together in this portion. And I do think that they will end up meeting up with the Bowmans. So I think that Proxy will get folded into that group.
I like that because I see totally...
He's got to be on the run too. I mean, he's going to be held responsible for all this.
Totally see Snyder being there at the very end of this whole thing, whatever that is.
I think so too. I really do think so.
All right. Well, this was an amping up. This was they put the foot on the accelerator.
Man, you know what would be like so crazy? If like Will is there and like somehow that kitty let run away has like a gun to Proxy's head and then Will like pleads for mercy to that kid and that kid's like nope and kills Proxy and Proxy's the one that like got Charlie back, got Bram out, everything like for Will. Oh, heartbreaker.
Yeah, that's too Game of Thrones for this show, I think. But you never know. They do surprise me.
What does it mean when you say too Game of Thrones?
Sadistic. Like stuff you see on Game of Thrones you've never seen anywhere else.
You think that having a boy shoot Proxy is something different than what we've seen so far? Mm-hmm. Where's the sadistic? What makes
the
it
part
so much more?
Where Will, having let him go, then puts him in the position... Have we seen anything like that?
No, but isn't that what the message has to get through their heads? If you don't look out for yourself, if you show mercy to someone else, if you're doing that because you think somewhere someone's going to show mercy to you, you are wrong. Isn't the only way the Bowman's going to get out of this?
Well, Proxy wouldn't be that person, though. It would be something more like a Maddie, a Hudson, a Gracie, something like that.
I think that we're still, I don't know. Do you think they're going to kill a Bowman?
Not for a while.
Do you think that ultimately they will kill a Bowman? I mean, go to the mat here by series finale.
I think so, because, I mean, otherwise it gets a little hollow. I mean, the reason people keep tuning in to The Walking Dead is that no one is safe, and that keeps it exciting.
I know that is true. This is different. Carl and Rick are not dead.
They're getting pretty beat up, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they are, but they're the equivalent of the Bowmans. They're the two. So the Bowmans have been defined as this is the family, just like Rick and Son have been defined, you know? And
in the comics, they killed Judith, right?
You better spoil alert that shit. You're evil. Evil!
It's years old.
So what? Some people don't read the comic book, Paul.
Well, they don't take evil from the comic book directly.
All right, anyway, whatever. So the one thing I wanted to mention is that so far they had shown us a French sort of influenced perspective. We sort of got this German influenced perspective. And this time we got this Japanese influence, what with the straw stick beater and the sake ritual, the kamikaze idea. What do you think? Are we if you go through the series of World War II.
I do think that's a very interesting thing because those are all big World War II players. How they interrelate in terms of if there's something more to be learned.
I'm just saying that they brought in like the culture and they brought yes. in the specific moves that that specific group did, like German with the, you know, with the papers, like you said last episode, and the like leather black jackets and yes. all that kind of stuff.
Well, and the whole
before we had the French cafe and
right,
the sitting out there.
Right, I mean, right.
We've really tried to have some sort of taste of these different cultures.
Very interesting. I mean,
what do you make of that?
I make that we may see some Russian and Italian by the time we're what I'm supposed to read into it. I just think that we're supposed to, you know, fully embrace that these are the influences. Don't make any mistake about it. It's World War II kind of rearranged, you know.
So I saw that there was a new proxy in town. Did you see that poster that the Red Hand people were slapping up on the face?
What did Snyder say his name was? Alcala, Alpaca, something like that.
I do not believe it's Alpaca.
It is Alcala. We haven't seen him yet, but yeah, we've seen pictures of the guy. I assume that that's who he was referring to when Snyder said to Nolan something along the lines of, I think your boss should be the next proxy. So I'm assuming that's who that is.
What do you think he's going to be like?
Total dick.
Total dick.
Nice. Well, yeah.
Do you know he's Ugly Betty's dad?
No, I didn't.
It is.
I think he represents this regime change. You know, kind of top-down regime change that we've seen through Will's eyes at work. So I think if he's the guy in charge of recruiting the Burks and the Bennetts, he may be shown to us at Country Club or something, but I bet he's a hard-ass, mean guy.
So do you think he's going to come into play with the Bowmans and this whole group? Is there going to be some actual interplay? I mean, obviously, Tony Plana is a guy people know. So he can't just be this background character. Don't you think they're going to come toe-to-toe in some way?
Maybe, but he's leading totally differently. I mean, Snyder knew Will personally. He recruited him personally. So he was in the trenches there with comparatively low-level folk. And so far, Bennett talks to Will. We assume that Bennett gets his orders from somewhere. When some people are used to operating in that very stratified structure like that, the idea of moving down and talking two levels below you is like crazy to them, believe it or not. So no, I guess the answer to your question is no. I don't know that. I don't think that they're going to interface directly.
What do we expect to see for next episode?
I think we should expect to see the shit hitting the fan about the explosion and that the Bowmans have to get into hurry-up mode to figure out how they're going to save their asses because they are more creative. They're not going to wait to be given a solution by the government.
Do you think they're just going to go underground with Broussard?
Nope. I think that they...
They're still going to do this
that may be
like view?
Nope. I think they're going to be getting out. I think they're going to try to get out, not like go underground and wait for something. I think they're going to be
How can they just get out though? I mean, there has to be a plan. So are they going to do that in plain view? Like he's going to still go to work and they're going to be making a plan? Or do you think they got to get out, like get out of view first, get the plan and then get out of the block?
That's going to be tricky. He works at the place where they take you to the torture room. So getting close enough to the torture room for them to say, you know what, while we're here, why don't we just go downstairs is like a very dangerous thing to do, you know? So
what about that handheld torture device, man, or that hand crank torture device?
Very medieval. Reminded me of like the Princess Bride, you know, yeah. when they're killing Wesley. It's very medieval, tactile. We're not just pressing a button and hurting you. We're like putting our own effort into hurting you. This is, you know, medieval kind of stuff.
Super weird. Does that make it so that it's like transportable? Because it's just like a human crank. Like you don't need to plug it in. That's troublesome.
I'm not sure that that's a high priority for that device. But yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, if push came to shove and they needed to go out to another flop house and say...
They could just bring the crank with.
It might work better than Burke's head shooting.
I think Maddie's going to also have to join back up with the Bowman crew because I think she's going to get out of the good graces of Nolan here pretty quickly. And I think she's going to be shoved back down. She'll be lucky if she doesn't join the jumpsuit crowd at the labor camp.
Just before we go here, wasn't that little PSA of theirs the lamest thing you've ever seen? Like, like a year ago, I didn't know what I was doing and I was stupid. And then Nolan's like, his delivery was so, maybe he was supposed to be still pissed from their talk earlier. If you ever want to know the right way to be or whatever, something like, whatever it is he says, It's all delivered in this very unbelievable kind of way.
I think the crusher for me was more that Maddie said a year ago she was homeless. If you were Katie watching that,
Right.
Or right. I lived with my sister and right. the family, and we were totally fine eating our food and whatever. But like the whole, I was homeless.
Right.
Woo.
I guess pasta night meant nothing to you, Maddie.
I would say eating those free oranges in our yard. Jeez Louise.
Orange Taco Tuesday.
Nice. We still haven't gotten season 3 renewal. What do you make of that?
I don't really remember when the renewal came down last year. I do think it was late.
This is very late, dude. This was episode 7.
I haven't read a whole lot of other review material related to the Colony season this year. I did notice that the AV squad thought that this was a positive uptick from kind of a muddling few episodes that were kind of slow-paced and not going anywhere. So I don't know. Maybe there's... Is there a larger perception out there that the show kind of hit a sophomore slump? I kind of detected that from the AV squad, but I haven't been unhappy.
What do you guys think out there as like audience members? Do you guys think that season 3 is a lock, or do you think that we've got to really continue to make Colony a trending?
I mean, if this season is it, they're going to have to blow everybody up, because that's the only thing that can happen in three episodes.
It's kind of true. Like, I mean, I don't know how this could end. I don't know how to wrap this up. It's true. So we'll have to see.
We'll see you next week. Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com. That's D-A-L-E-Y review.com. Facebook or Twitter or wherever you find us. Please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and dad.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.